We desire your soul to power our operandi, and you can't escape our lacuna. That's it. Men who scare easily don't last long in the Force, but now I'm scared as hell. Although religion always struck me as daft, suddenly it's all I've got. If they're soul stealers, pray to God. How does it go? Our Father.
Splendid idea, says Jonah. I'll do you a deal, Detective Inspector. If you recite the Lord's Prayer from start to finish, a Book of Common Prayer version, you win a get-out-of-jail-free card. Go on, see how far you get.
This is juvenile, brother, sighs Nora.
Fair's fair, he should have a chance. On your marks, Plod, get set. Our Father, which art in heaven, go on.
This Jonah's a skunk and a snake, but I've got no choice. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thou name.
Was that a vow or a thy, you quaff?
Asks Jonah. I have to play this bastard's game. I think. Thy.
Bravo! Onwards, onwards! Hallowed be thy name.
What's next? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and lead us not into temptation, and forgive us our trespasses as we...
Oh, trespassers, as in get off my land, or trespasses, as in transgressions. Former or latter, person or act.
Jesus, I want to glass his sodding face. I think the act.
Plods on a roll. Forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who...
Who... What's this? A thought stutter or an owl impression?
Who trespass against us. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. I've done it. I look at him. The bastard actually smiles.
Alas, it's forgive them that trespass against us. Temptation comes after trespasses, and you forgot the deliver us from evil bit. Ironically.
I'm going to die. This hour. Now. Me.
The point of that little interlude being?
Asks Nora.
A sprinkle of last-minute despair gives a soul an agreeably earthy aftertaste. Ready when you are, sister?
Nora mutters, I'm always ready. And the Greyer twins begin tracing symbols in the air. They're chanting, too. A chant in a language I don't know. And something appears above the candle flame, a bit above eye level. A bruise in the air, a glowing lump, lit reddish from inside, beating like a heart, big as a brain. Worms or roots or veins snake out from it. Some grow towards the twins, and several come my way, and I try to pull my head back or swat them away, or even shriek or shut my eyes, but I can't. They enter my mouth, my ears, my nostrils, like sharp, tiny fingers, and get to work inside me. I feel a nail of pain sink into my forehead, and in the mirror, I see a black dot there. Not blood. Seconds pass. Something oozes out and hovers there. A blob the size and shape of a golf ball, right in front of my eyes. It's almost see-through, like gel, or egg white, and filled with shiny grains of dust, or galaxies, or... God, it's beautiful. Jesus, it shimmers. It's alive. It's mine. The twins' faces loom up. Jonah to my left, Nora to my right. Smooth-skinned, hungry, pursing their lips like whistlers, sucking so sharply that my soul, what else could it be, is slowly but surely stretched like blue tack. Half my soul streams like smoke into Nora's mouth and half into Jonah's. I'd sob if I could. Or I'd say, I'll get you, I'll kill you, I'll make you pay. But I'm just the residue of Gordon Edmonds now. I'm his husk. I'm his flesh and skin suit. The twins gasp and let out soft groans like junkies shooting up when the drug hits the bloodstream. Now there's a rushing noise louder than the end of the world. Now it's quiet, like the morning after the end of the world. The floating brain thing's gone. Its air veins are gone too. Like nothing was ever there. The Greyer twins kneel across the candle from each other, as still as the flame that never moves. The mirror's empty. Look at the scorched, tiny, papery scrap. There, on the floorboard. That was a moth, once.
Oink, oink. 1997. Five, pronounces Axel Hardwick, astrophysics postgrad, corduroy clad, hair short, black and curly, real name, Alan, not Axel, but he thinks Axel makes him sound more Guns N' Roses. Axel looks at us as if we're the ones who haven't bothered turning up. Some shrinkage is inevitable as the dead wood drops out, but a headcount of five at this point in the term is frankly dismal. There's a beery racket booming up the stairs from the main bar below, and my mind sort of floats off, and I wonder if I'd have met more people if I'd joined the Photography Society in Freshers' Week instead of the Paranormal Society, like I meant to. But then, I wouldn't have met Todd. Todd Cosgrove, second year maths, a shyish, elfish guy. Black coat, white t-shirt, maroon jeans, camel boots, vice president of Parasoc, fan of the Smiths. Across the table from me, Todd sips his Newcastle brown ale. His mad, quiffy hair's brown too, brown like strong stewed tea before you add the milk. Todd lives with his parents here in town, but he's not creepy or helpless. He's bright and kind and strong, so there's probably a good reason why he still lives at home. My mouth and brain seize up if I try to speak with him, but when I shut my eyes at night, Todd's there. It's crazy. But like every love song in the history of love songs says, love is crazy. The walk may have deterred some of the waverers, opines Angelica Gibbons. Definitely more Gibbons than Angelica. She's a second year studying anthropology, has floppy indigo hair, Doc Martens, dresses like a fortune teller, and is as big-boned as me. I thought we might be friends, but when we only scored 18% on the telepathy test, she blamed me and said I had no psychic potential whatsoever. It was the way she said whatsoever. Axel scowls. The Fox and Hounds is a 20-minute walk from campus. Tops. I refuse to eat into Parasoc's budget by laying on fleets of buses for a 2-mile walk. He starts spinning a beer mat. A leprechaun on an enameled Guinness ad over the fireplace catches my eye. He's playing his fiddle for a dancing toucan. I completely agree, Axel, says Angelica. I'm just saying. Maybe a gang of them are coming, but got lost en masse like. Lance Arnott. Final year philosophy, dandruff, Pink Floyd the Wall t-shirt, pongs of hamburgers. Lance made a pass at me at the Roman ruins at Silchester. Frightmare on Elm Street or what? I lied about a boyfriend in Malvern, but he thinks I'm just playing hard to get. He turns to Fern.
Where's that mate of yours this week, Fernie?
Fern Penhaligon. First year, like me, but doing drama. Rapunzel hair, slim as a model, Cornish-born, Chelsea-bred, Alexander McQueen jeans, Union Jack Parker, and here to research the supernatural for a stage version of Ghost that she's starring in, curls her lip. It's Fern. And which mate do you mean? She sips the Cointreau she let Lance buy her, but he's a bigger dick than he acts if he thinks he's in with a chance.
The one who came to St. Alfric's. The one with the huge gazonking...
Lance mimes a pair of breasts.
Personality.
The Welsh one. Fern swirls ice cubes round her glass. Yasmin, you mean?
Yasmin. Get a better offer tonight, did she? Eh, boyo?
Lance gurns at Todd. I send Todd a telepathic message saying... Ignore Lance. He's a plonker. And lo and behold, Todd ignores Lance. So maybe it's actually Angelica who has no psychic potential whatsoever. I try again. Look at my fingernails, Todd. I painted them peacock blue. But Todd's got his apple-pit brown eyes on Fern, who's explaining that her absent friend Yasmin was underwhelmed by the last field trip.
Underwhelmed?
Axel stops spinning his beer mat.
By any standard metric, St. Alfric's is England's most haunted church.
Fern shrugs. She was hoping to catch a glimpse of an actual ghost instead of catching a head cold.
Paranormal entities don't come when you whistle, Angelica tells her. They're not like live-in Filipino maids.
I'd be stung by that, but for Fern, it's water off a duck's back. It's Filipina for females, you'll find. And I'd know, of course, being so awfully, frightfully posh.
Fern places one of her Gauloise cigarettes between her lips and lights it.
Angelica's squished like a bug, and I think, direct hit, and Fern gives me a knowing look.
Well, I'm not hanging about any longer for people who aren't coming or who don't show up on time,
announces Axel, passing around a thin wadge of printouts headed Paranormal Society Field Trip Briefing, 25th October 1997, and subtitled The Slade Alley Vanishings. Underneath are two photographs. The top picture's actually split into two. The left half is a grainy school photo of a boy, about 12, with geeky hair and a nose on the wrong side of large. The right half shows a strict-looking woman in her late 30s, dark hair bunched up, thin, wearing a blouse with a frilly neck, pearls and a cardigan. Mother and son, you can tell at a glance. Neither was comfortable looking into a camera. The caption reads, Nathan and Rita Bishop, last seen in Slade Alley, Saturday, 27th October, 1979. The bottom picture shows a man of 30 or so, grinning at the camera, sinking a beer and dressed like a cop from Miami Vice, though he's going bald and he isn't thin. His caption reads, Detective Inspector Gordon Edmonds, last seen entering Slade Alley, Saturday, 29th October, 1988. So I was right. He is a cop. At the foot of the page is Copyright Axel Hardwick, 1997. That's it.
The Slade Alley Vanishings, reads Lance. Cool. I think we can all read the title, says Angelica. The case study would have taken an age to write down in all its detail, says Axel, so I'm going to brief you all verbally.
It was a dark and stormy night, says Lance in a comedy Somerset accent.
If you're not serious about this, Angelica tells him, you just cranking up the atmosphere a bit. Go on, Axel.
Axel stares at Lance to tell him, grow up.
It begins 18 years ago in early November 1979. A pissed-off landlord was banging on the door of a property he was renting to Rita Bishop, divorced mother of Nathan, pictured here. The rent check had bounced. Again. A neighbor told the landlord that he hadn't seen either Rita Bishop or her son for at least 10 days. Hearing this, the landlord notified the police, who found out that Nathan hadn't been at school since the last Friday in October. A half-assed search ensued. Why half-assed? Because Rita Bishop had dual British-Canadian citizenship, an ex-husband living in Zimbabwe/Rhodesia, and mounting debt. The police assumed she'd done a runner for financial reasons and filed the case in the WGT file.
Fern flicks her mane of hair. WGT?
It stands for Who Gives a Toss.
Axel sips his bitter, while Angelica acts all amused.
Next, fast forward to September 1988. A patient named Fred Pink wakes up from a coma in the unit at the Royal Berkshire Hospital, 9 years after being knocked into oblivion by a drunk taxi driver on Westwood Road.
Westwood Road's this road, right? I ask.
It was on tonight's rendezvous sheet, says Angelica.
Stupid moo. I sip my Diet Coke, wishing I were Fern so I could administer a barbed put-down. And pull guys. Like Todd.
just for example.
Fred Pink began working through all the back copies of the local newspaper to see what he'd missed during what he calls his big sleep. Pretty soon, he found a picture of the missing Rita and Nathan Bishop. They looked familiar. Why? Because back in 1979, just before the minicab driver hit him, Fred Pink had spoken with Rita Bishop at the Cranberry Avenue entrance to Slade Alley, one street up from Westwood Road. She'd asked if he knew where Lady Nora Grayer lived. Fred Pink said no, walked down the alley, and at the far end, got knocked down by the taxi.
Bang, crash, wallop!
Lance rearranges his genitals without a flicker of embarrassment. No disrespect to Mr. Pink, says Todd, but how trustworthy a witness was he? His voice has a soft yokel twang, but it's actually quite sexy. Axel's nod means, good question. The police were skeptical too. This neighborhood isn't rough, but it certainly isn't rich. If a genuine lady had her residence here, she'd stick out like a very posh sore thumb. Even so, CID didn't want Fred Pink to feel brushed off, so they sent a man to give Slade Alley the once-over. Enter Detective Inspector Gordon Edmonds. Axel taps the second photograph on the A4 sheet. On October 22nd, 1988, he entered Slade Alley and found a door in the wall. It was open. He went in and found a garden and a substantial property called Slade House.
And living in Slade House was Lady Grayer? Asks Angelica, looping her finger through her indigo hair.
No. By 1988, the owner was a young widow called Chloe Chetwynd. Edmund's brief report, my primary source for tonight's field trip, makes it clear that Chloe Chetwynd knew nothing about a Lady Grayer or the missing bishops.
Ah, but she would say that, wouldn't she?
Fern stubs out her cigarette. In racy Victorian novels, beware of young widows, especially attractive ones.
Pity no one told Gordon Edmonds that, says Axel.
The following Saturday, he went back to Slade House. Apparently, he'd recommended a security contractor to Chloe Chetwynd to fix that garden door, and she asked him to check the workmanship. A witness saw him park his car on Westwood Road at 6 p.m. Axel can't resist a dramatic pause. But Detective Inspector Edmonds was never seen again.
When a cop goes missing, says Angelica, the fuzz don't rest until they found their man. The media join in too.
True, replies Axel. And Gordon Edmonds did make the front pages for a few days. Theories about an IRA kidnapping or a suicide pact kept the story on the boil for a while. But when Edmonds refused to show up either dead or alive, pictures of Lady Di's arse or the poll tax riots or the divorce of the day reclaimed their rightful place on the front page of the News of the Screws, and Detective Inspector Edmonds fell off the radar.
Angelica asks, what was Chloe Chetwynd's version of events?
In a curious twist to the tale, says Axel, Chloe Chetwynd was never tracked down by the investigators.
We look at each other, wondering what we've missed.
Hang on a mo, says Lance.
So who answered the door at Slade House when the cops went looking for Gordon Edmonds?
In yet another curious twist, Axel sips his beer. Slade House turned out to be just as elusive as Chloe Chetwynd.
Whoa, 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 says Lance. The house disappeared.
Big stone houses, Fern points out, don't normally melt into the fog.
Axel sniffs.
Last time I looked, we're the Paranormal Society. Down in the bar, a fruit machine vomits out a slug of coins.
Proper X-File, this is,
says Lance, teetering on his chair.
What if, proposes Fern, Gordon Edmonds made Slade House up in his notes and invented Chloe Chetwynd too?
Why risk so much on such a flimsy lie? Asks Angelica.
No idea, states Fern. Nervous breakdown? Serial fantasist? Who knows?
But which is likelier, people, really? Fabricated police records or a house going poof in violation of the laws of physics?
What did that security contractor guy say? Asks Todd.
Axel's pretending not to enjoy this, but he is.
He swore blind that nobody ever contacted him about the Slade House. Neither a Chloe Chetwynd nor a Detective Inspector Edmonds.
Murderers have been known to lie, says Angelica.
CID investigated him, says Axel, and every locksmith, builder, whatever, in the area too, and found zilch, nada, niente, sod all. Nobody had worked at any Slade House in or near Westwood Road.
Todd asks, was the Slade Alley connection between Gordon Edmonds' disappearance in 1988 and the Bishop's disappearance in 1979 made public at the time?
Axel shakes his head. The factoid was suppressed. The cops didn't want Slade Alley to become a magnet for true crime nuts.
Typical of the fascist pigs to repress the truth, says Angelica.
I'd like to ask Angelica how safe she thinks she'd be in a society without any police at all, but I don't have the nerve.
Todd asks, how did you link the two disappearances, Axel?
An informant brought it to my attention.
Axel looks a bit cagey.
And suggested that Parasop take a closer look.
What informant? Lance picks his nose and deposits his bogey under the table.
I may be a bit overweight, but he's actually repulsive.
An uncle of mine, admits Axel after a short pause.
Fred Pink.
Fred Pink's your uncle, Angelica gulps.
No shit. The window cleaner in the coma. But you're a Hardwick, not a Pink.
Fred Pink's my mother's brother. My mother is Hardwick, nay Pink. Slade Alley is Fred's obsession, I'm sorry to say.
Why sorry? Asks Fern, the question I wanted to ask.
Axel wrinkles his mouth.
Uncle Fred feels, chosen.
Chosen for what? Presses Fern. By whom?
Axel shrugs. Chosen to find out the truth about Slade House. He had a hard time adjusting to real life after his 9 years in a coma, and he's, in care now. Out beyond Slough. In a unit.
Too bloody brilliant, declares Lance, holding up a palm to indicate he's about to belch, and he belches.
All the supernatural yarns need a realist explanation and a supernatural one. Like, is the hero really seeing ghosts, or is he having a thermonuclear breakdown? I love this case! I'm in, Ax.
The more the merrier, says Axel, unmerrily.
Angelica sips her pale ale. It's an intriguing case study. But how are the six of us supposed to find this Slade House and all these missing people when, like, a gazillion cops failed?
The question's not how, says Axel. It's when.
Look at the dates, people.
He taps the A4 sheet.
Use your grey matter.
I look again, but all I see are the man, woman and boy staring out of their inky Xerox images.
Little did they know.
My fingers find the jade pendant that arrived from my sister in New York this morning. It's a symbol of eternity, and I love it.
Todd, the mathematician, works it out first.
Christ, I've got it. The bishops vanished on the last Saturday in October 1979. Fast forward 9 years, and Gordon Edmonds vanishes on the last Saturday in October 1988. Fast forward another 9 years, and you get... He glances at Axel, who nods. Today. Last Saturday in October 1997, says Lance. Shitting Scoobies, Axel. Today. Today. Lance is able to take the piss and be sincere all at once. A mystery house that only blinks into existence one night every 9 years. God, I've got a hard-on as big as Berkshire. Drink up. Westwood Road street lamps have orange halos of fine drizzle. Cars dash from speed bump to speed bump. A St. John ambulance trundles past us, not in a hurry. The guys lead the way, with Lance airing a theory that Slade House could be the mouth of a miniature black hole. I'd love to add something that would make Todd respect me as a sharp thinker, but I'm always too slow. Angelica and Fern are arguing about whether or not When Harry Met Sally is offensive to women, which leaves me bringing up the rear, my customary place. I look at the rooms with undrawn curtains and see sofas, lamps, pictures, and look, a girl practicing the piano in a room as blue as July. She has short hair, a blue and grey school uniform, and let's call her Grace. Grace looks upset because she can't get her piano piece just perfect. But as her elder sister, I'd be a gifted pianist and I'd help Grace out. I'd never tell her you'd feel better about yourself if you lost a few pounds. Mum's making dinner in the back, not for a dozen bitchy Shell Oil wives, but just for Dad, Grace, me and Freya, who didn't jet off to New York as soon as she graduated, but who works in London so she can hang out with me every weekend. Mum's not cooking fusion, demi-veg or faddish. She's cooking roast chicken with potatoes, carrots and gravy. I'm stirring the gravy. Dad's walking home from the station because he's not a 190k a year plus share options oil exec. He works for Greenpeace, but only for 40k. Okay, 60k. Grace senses me watching, looks up and out at the street, and I do a little wave, but she draws the curtain. You never know if they've seen you. Are you okay, Sally? Jesus, it's Todd, standing right next to me. Yes, I say, jolted into acting normal. Yes, I... The others are watching me and waiting. Sorry, everyone. I was, away with the fairies, suggests Fern, not unkindly. Maybe, I admit, but I'm back again now. Wagons roll, then, says Lance, and we're off. But Todd stays by me. He's got a baggy duffel coat, and there's room in his pocket for both our hands. Telepathically, I tell Todd, take my hand. But he doesn't. Why is it only slime balls like Lance who hit on me? If I were slimmer and funnier and sexier, I'd know what to say to Todd now. So before we even found Slade Alley, Todd'd be telling me, look, Sal, I vote we grab ourselves a Chinese takeout and then head back to my place for coffee. And I'd reply, you know, I vote we forget the takeout. We step aside for an Afghan hound trailing a woman in a long coat and sunglasses. She ignores us. I mutter, charmed, I'm sure. Todd makes a noise to show me he's on my side. We walk a few paces. There's something invisible connecting us. I hear a grunting noise like sex getting louder and louder, but it's only a jogger running by. He's wearing black and glow-in-the-dark orange, like he's escaped from an acid rave somewhere. So, says Todd, I don't want to sound too forward. No, not at all, I answer nervously, and my heart goes zoom. It's fine, of course, yes.
He pauses, confused.
But I haven't asked you yet.
Sally Timms, you stupid oink.
I just meant, ask away.
People, I found it!
Lance called out, a few paces ahead, and the moment's gone, and my heart goes, no. Todd shines his torch up at an easy-to-miss plaque. Slade Alley. The passageway is dark and narrow, only a bit wider than a pushchair. Lance says,
spooky as hell or what?
Of course it's spooky, says Fern, lighting one of her French cigarettes. It's nearly night, and it's an enclosed space.
I feel, says Angelica in a wavery voice, presences here.
One part of me thinks, yeah, sure you do. But another part of me kind of knows what Angelica means, actually. Slade Alley cuts through black shadow before turning sharp left under a feeble lamp that pulses dimly. If I was a presence, this is the kind of place I'd be drawn to.
Who'll disturb the presences first?
Asks Lance, deadpan.
You'd be less cocky, says Angelica, if you had the sight.
Fred's my uncle, says Axel, so I'll lead the way. Ready?
Lance, Angelica, Fern, me and Todd follow Axel, in that order. I feel safe with Todd behind me and trail my gloved fingers along the bricks on each side. Slade Alley can't be more than 3 feet across. A properly fat person, fatter than me, I mean, couldn't get past someone coming the other way. It's cold, I murmur to no one. But Todd hears.
Sure is. The air's like a knife against your throat. Cool echo, says Lance. Balrogs of the deep, I summon thee!
Mind who you're invoking, says Angelica, schoolmarmishly. Lance bursts into an echoey recital of Bohemian Rhapsody before Axel tells him,
put a cork in it, Lance.
He's reached the corner under the lamp, and seconds later the six of us are huddled there. After the left turn, Slade Alley runs on for 40 or 50 paces. It's hard to see, until it turns right under another high-up, flickery lamp.
Always a bad sign, says Lance. Those buzzing bulbs. Anyone seen Candyman?
I actually have, but I don't say so, and nobody else says anything either. Slade Alley's just an alley in an ordinary town, but its brick walls are as high as two men and block any view of anything. The sky is just a long strip of soupy dusk over our heads. My back's pressed against Todd, who smells of damp wool, warmth, and mint. First chance I get, I'll ask him what he was about to ask me back on the street. Then he'll pluck up the courage to ask me out. I have to make this happen, to take control for once.
No sign of a gate, says Lance. It's just one long wall.
Two long walls, you'll find, says Angelica, annoyingly.
Okay, says Axel. This alley may be a POS.
What's a POS when it's at home?
Asks Lance.
Paranormal occurrence site, which explains why Angelica's picking up presences.
God, Angelica looks so pleased with herself.
Lance, Fern, Todd, I need you to scan the right-hand wall, every square inch, all the way to the far end. Angelica, Sally, and I'll take the left. We're looking for PAIs,
which is an abbreviation of anyone?
Todd clears his throat.
Psychic anomaly indicators.
Excellent, says Axel.
And I kind of feel pleased too. Remind me what a PAI looks like exactly, says Fern.
Items, signs, writing,
says Axel. They manifest themselves in many different forms. Anything that's out of place could be a PAI.
I'll search for rips in the membrane, says Angelica.
What membrane? Asks Fern, just as Angelica hoped.
The membrane between worlds? You can't see it, though. It's only visible to empaths, those of us with developed chakra vision.
Ah, of course, says Fern, as if she's profoundly impressed. That membrane.
Open-mindedness is a wonderful thing, says Angelica. Try it sometime.
Fern lights another cigarette.
If you're too open-minded, your brain falls out. I can't see Angelica's face in the shadows, but I'm pretty sure she'll be firing death rays at Fern.
Not sure if this is a PAI,
Lance calls out a few yards ahead.
But it is a gate.
Everyone joins Lance, who crouches next to a small black iron door. At least, I think it's a door. It's low and very narrow, like it was built for skinny hobbits, but it's got no handle or latch or sign or anything.
PAIs are often camouflaged as normal objects, says Axel.
Looks solid.
Fern wraps her knuckles on it.
Feels solid.
Don't knock,
Angelica tells Fern.
You may wake a hostile entity.
She presses her palm against it.
Emanations, definitely.
Odd that none of us noticed it from the corner, I say.
It's a narrow door, says Fern,
from an obtuse angle.
No keyhole, says Lance. The lock must be inside.
He presses the doorframe at various points.
What's that in aid of? Asks Angelica.
Release latches.
But the door stays shut.
If I stood on your shoulders, Lance says to Axel, I might just be able...
Not before my skeleton collapsed.
Axel turns to Fern, not to lardy-assed Sally Timms, obviously.
Fern, could you climb?
Forget it, says Fern.
If Slade House is on the other side of this wall, this titchy door can't be the only way in.
Why don't we just follow the alley out to the street and walk round the other side until we reach the main gates?
This makes a lot of sense, but Lance isn't having it.
Ah, but if it was that simple, the police would have found it, yeah?
Interdimensional wormholes don't have other sides or main gates. This is the door, all right.
There's something mocking about how Lance says this, and a voice in my head says, don't trust him. He's toying with all of you. Then, something strange happens. My hand decides to press itself hard against the door, and a zap of heat goes through my palm. I let out a yelp of surprise, like a trodden-on puppy, and the small black iron door opens, like it was only waiting to be asked. It waits, ajar.
Bugger me, says Lance.
Not literally, Axel.
Looks like Sal's got the magic touch, says Todd. It was probably open the whole time, says Angelica.
But I'm so spooked, I don't even care. We emerge from a shrubbery and stare up a long lawn at a big old stone house. A Virginia creeper, dark crimson in the twilight, grows up one side. Faint stars shine through the gaps in the cloud, but the sky is still a little lighter and the air's a little warmer than it was in the alley.
Viewed through my non-psychic eyeballs, says Fern, Slade House looks more Rocky Horror Picture Show than a membrane between worlds.
Angelica can't rise to the bait because Fern's right. We are looking at a student house mid-Halloween party. Novocaine for the Soul by Eels thumps out. Bill Clinton and a nun are canoodling on a bench, and a gorilla, a grim reaper, and a wicked witch of the West are sitting around a sundial thing, smoking.
My, you're a crafty one, Axel,
says Lance.
Huh? Asks Axel, vaguely, then sharply.
Crafty? You've lured your poor disciples to a piss-up, right?
I'm not luring anyone anywhere, snaps Axel.
Hang on, says Fern. Is this the same Slade house that the collective brain of the Thames Valley Police failed to locate?
Axel mumbles.
Apparently so, but...
His butt fizzles out.
Good, says Fern.
And while this fit of sanity lasts, could we rule out the theory that we just passed through a black hole?
Fern!
It's the Wicked Witch of the West, walking over.
Fern! I thought it was you!
The witch is American, and her mask is green.
We met at Professor Marvin's seminar on Jacobean drama. Kate Childs, Blythewood College exchange student. Though right now...
She gives a twirl.
I'm moonlighting for the forces of evil. Gotta say, Fern, your performance in The Monkey's Paw blew me away. Kate!
Fern, the future A-lister, forgets us, her embarrassing tagger-alongers.
So glad you gave a monkeys about monkeys. You kidding?
Kate Childs takes a long drag on her spliff and releases a plume of dope smoke.
I literally died of envy.
Lance asks,
Are you smoking what I think you're smoking, you wicked, wicked worstest witch?
That depends.
The American girl gives Lance a dubious look.
On what exactly it is you think I'm smoking?
Shut it a sec, Lance, says Angelica.
Excuse me, Kate. We'd just like you to settle something. Is that building Slade House?
Kate Childs smiles like it might be a trick question.
Unless they've renamed it in, like, the last half hour, yes.
Thank you, Angelica continues. And who lives here?
Me, and about 15 Erasmus exchange scholars. You guys are here for the Halloween party, right?
Definitely, says Lance. We're 6 psychic investigators.
So, just to be clear, says Angelica, the university owns Slade House, this building where you live.
Technically, the Erasmus Institute owns it, though a university groundsman mows the grounds on his shit-on mower. There's a sign round the front that... Christ! Did I just say shit-on mower? I did, didn't I?
Kate Childs bends over with silent laughter, which vanishes as quickly as it came.
Sorry. What were you saying?
The sign, says Axel. The sign round the front.
Slade House, Erasmus Scholarship Center, sponsoring cross-cultural understanding and education since 1982. Walk past it every day. It's by the...
She jabs a finger over the roof of Slade House.
Big gates. So, if that's all settled...
Kate Childs points to the big house.
Eat! Drink. Be merry. Tomorrow we...
She waves her hand to shake out the last verb, but gives up and offers Lance her spliff. Lance turns to us.
I'll see you guys later.
I'll lodge a formal apology on Parasox Records, says Axel, as he, Angelica, Fern, Todd and me approach the house. My uncle swore that Slade House had never been found. Axel slaps the stone wall of the building. Either he's a liar or he's delusional. Who cares? My first error was to believe him.
I feel bad for Axel. He's your uncle. You shouldn't feel guilty just for believing him.
Sal's right, says Todd. No harm's been done.
Axel ignores us.
My second error
was a failure to reconnoitre the locale. A short stroll down Cranberry Avenue would have done the job. It was unforgivable. Axel's near tears. Cavalier. Amateurish. Who cares? Says Fern. Looks like a slinky humdinger of a party. Axel adjusts his scarf. I care. Parasok is suspended until further notice. Good night. With that, he walks down the passage around the side of Slade House. Axel! Angelica rushes after him. Hold your horses! Todd watches them disappear. Poor guy. Poor Angelica, says Fern, which I don't understand. I thought Fern hated her. Well, when in Rome... She trots up the steps and slips inside. Todd turns to me and makes a what-a-night face. I make a tell-me-about-it face. He readjusts his glasses. If I were his girlfriend, I'd make him get frameless ones to let his doomed poet good looks shine. Todd, you wanted to ask me something? Todd looks all hunted. Did I? Earlier, on the street, before Lance found the alley. Todd scratches his neck. Did I? I deflate. Todd's pretending to have forgotten because he's got cold feet. It's all these waif-thin girls gyrating their skinny bodies around. Maybe if we go inside and chat, Sal, Todd's saying, it'll come back to me. I mean, if you've got no other plans tonight, a quick drink and a chat, no strings attached. Just the one, sister, I tell Todd a second time, louder, because Caught by the Fuzz by Supergrass is pumping on the stereo. We're huddled in a corner by an oven with a noisy fan. The kitchen's crammed, misty with cigarette smoke and smells of bins. Todd's drinking a tiger beer from a bottle, and I'm drinking shit red wine from a plastic cup. Your sister's older than you, I'm guessing, says Todd. Was it a 50-50 guess, or can you really tell? An 80-20 hunch. What's her name? Freya. She lives in New York these days. Laughter explodes nearby. Todd cups his ear. What's that? Freya! As in the kick-ass Norse goddess of, love, sex, beauty, fertility, gold, war, and death. That's the one, I say. As opposed to Sally, a doomed pit pony, or a tart in the East End docks in a Dickens novel. Not true. Todd actually looks hurt. Sally's a sunny name. It's kind. All the research suggests that Freyas go way farther in life than Sallys. Name me one famous Sally. Go on. You can't, can you? My sister won every medal going at school, picked up good Mandarin in Singapore, fluent French in Geneva, graduated in journalism from Imperial College this June, moved in with her boyfriend in Brooklyn, who is, of course, a hotshot Chinese-American documentary maker, and got a job with a photo agency on Bleecker Street. Not an internship, an actual paid job. All within a fortnight of touching down at JFK. That's so Freya. If I sound jealous, I am. God, Todd, did you spike my wine with truth serum? No, but don't stop, Sal. I love hearing you talk. I actually heard him perfectly well. But I love hearing Todd using the words I, love, and you in such close proximity. So I ask him, say that again? I said, I love hearing you talk. Maybe Freya's jealous of you, too. As if. Here's my potted biography to prove the point. Sally Timms, born Canterbury in 1979. Todd's paying close attention. Like he really wants to hear this. Dad was a Shell Oil man and Mum was a Shell Oil wife. They still are. Shell's like Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Dad got promoted to the Singapore office when I was 8,
and we all moved out. Singapore's all rules. Every square yard's hemmed in. When I was 12, I had a kind of breakdown, and I hesitate, wondering if Todd's admiring my honesty or thinking, head case, pull back. But his beautiful brown eyes encouraged me to carry on. My parents decided I wasn't culturally adaptable, so I ended up at a girls' school in Great Malvern in Worcestershire. 6 years of English weather, of crap English food, lots of Singaporean girls, ironically, lots of rich people's problem daughters too, like me. But slimmer, prettier, and bitchier. I should have fitted right in, but I loathed it. Todd asks, "Did your parents know you were so unhappy?" I shrug. It was a matter of making my bed and lying in it. Dad got promoted to Brunei. Mum stayed in Singapore. Freya left for Sydney. This was all pre-email, of course, so we all had to build our own lives, pretty much independently. We reconvened for summers and Christmases, but while Mum and Freya were like long-lost sisters, I was the, well, I'd like to say black sheep of the family, but black sheep are kind of cool. Todd, I can't believe you want to listen to me whinge on. You're not whinging. You had a tough time. I sip my shit wine. Not compared to an AIDS orphan, or any North Korean, or a Shell Oil wife's maid. I forget my good luck. Who doesn't? Says Todd. And I'm about to say, you don't, I bet. But then this black guy with hair dyed white opens the oven door next to us.
Excuse us, boys and girls.
He slides out a tray of garlic bread and offers us a slice.
Go on, you know you want to.
I don't know if it's a real London accent or a Cockney piss take, but the garlic bread smells authentically gorgeous. I hesitate. Todd says, I will if you will. Mum's blind, Todd tells me, when we're on our third slice. Actually, I'm on my fourth. But I stop chewing. Todd.
Hey, it's no big deal. People live with worse.
It's not a big deal. Is that why you live at home?
Uh-huh. I got accepted at Edinburgh, and Mum and Dad were all, go on, son, it's your life. But Dad's not getting any younger. I'm an only child, so I stayed. I don't regret it. I've got my own granny flat above the garage. All mod cons for...
Todd realises that if he says girlfriends, it'll look like he's hitting on me.
For personal
space and independent living? I offer, wiping a dribble of butter off my chin as sophisticatedly as possible.
Personal space and independent living. Can I use that?
I dare to say, only with me... I try not to ogle as Todd grins and licks garlic butter off his fingers. If it's not too personal, Todd, can I ask if your mum was born blind or if it came on in later life?
Later life. She was diagnosed when I was 11. Retinitis pigmentosa, or RP, to its friends. She went from about 90% vision to less than 10% in a year. Not the best of times. These days she can tell if it's night or day, and that's about it. But we're still lucky. Sometimes RP ushers in deafness and chronic fatigue as well. But Mum can hear me swear from a mile away. She works too, transcribing audiobooks into Braille. She did that Crispin Hershey novel, Desiccated Embryos.
I say, cool. But don't add that I thought the book was massively overrated. Todd's knees, almost touching mine. If I were Drunker, or Fern, or Freya, I'd put my hand on it and tell Todd, kiss me, you idiot. Can't you see I want you to? And I'd sound so classy. But if I tried it, I'd come over like a drunk, podgy, sad sack slut. like a female dance. And I can't, won't, mustn't, don't.
Cool.
You and Mum would get on. Todd stands up. Really well.
Was that an invitation?
I'd love that, Todd, I say, inserting I, love, and Todd into the same sentence. God, I'd love to meet her.
Let's make it happen. Look, I'm going to track down the bathroom. Promise not to go anywhere.
I do, most solemnly. I watch him vanish among the bodies. Todd Cosgrove, a good name for a boyfriend. Todd is kind of classless, while Cosgrove is borderline posh. Nice balance. Sally Tim sounds like a shat-upon-events organizer, but Sal Cosgrove could be a rising star at the BBC, or an interior designer to the stars, or a legendary editor. Sal Cosgrove isn't fat, either. She'd never wolf down a family-sized bag of minstrels and make herself vomit it up in the toilet afterwards. True, I only properly started talking with Todd half an hour ago, but every instance of undying love was only half an hour young, once upon a time. Behind me, Darth Vader's slagging off his sociology lecturer to a thin-as-a-rake Incredible Hulk, while in front of me, the Grim Reaper's scythe slides to the floor as he or she flirts with a black angel with crumpled wings. I open my handbag and get out my Tiffany compact mirror. A sorry present from Freya for being too busy for me to stay with her in New York in August. The girl in the mirror fixes her lipstick. With Todd as my official boyfriend, I'll stick to my diet. I'll only eat fruit for breakfast. I'll only eat half my present portions. Mum and Freya's jaws will drop when they see me. God, that'll feel good. So now that's decided, I walk over to the food counter. Popcorn, more garlic bread, and two Wedgwood cake stands piled high with brownies. One cake stand has a little flag stuck into the topmost brownie, saying, hash brownies, while the flag on the other one reads, no hash brownies. Apart from a Snickers bar before my Chaucer seminar, plus the tube of Pringles I had at the library, I haven't eaten a thing since lunch, if we gloss over the garlic bread. Plus, I burned scads of calories walking to the Fox and Hounds. One tiny no-hash brownie won't hurt. Holy hell! My mouth actually froths. They're that delicious. Dark chocolate, hazelnuts, rum and raisins. I'm about to eat a second one, when this tanned, blonde, blue-eyed action man body in muscle-hugging black appears and asks in a 24-carat Aussie accent,
"Didn't we meet at the Morrissey gig?"
I would have remembered. Wrong girl, I'm afraid.
Story of my life. But seriously, you've got a doppelganger. I'm Mike. Melbourne Mike. As opposed to Margate Mike. Nice to meet you. Question mark?
We shake hands. I'm Sal, I say. From Singapore, I suppose, if I'm from anywhere. Singapore's more exotic than Malvern, as long as you've never actually lived there. Melbourne Mike lifts a man of mystery eyebrow.
Singapore Sal? I think I drank three of those one night in a cocktail bar.
All on your own, some Sal? Of all the guys who've hit on me and who haven't been drunk, which isn't actually all that many, Melbourne Mike's the best looking by light years. But I've got Todd. So I give Mike an apologetic smile. Afraid not. Melbourne Mike does a courtly bow.
Lucky bloke. Happy Halloween.
Off he goes. And screw you, Isolde Delahunty at Great Malvern Beacon School for Girls. And your platoon of body fascist Barbies, who spent 8 years calling me oink like it was just a friendly nickname, and saying oink, oink, oink when you passed me on the stairs or in the showers after hockey, and I had to smile as if it were all just a funny joke, but you knew it wasn't. You knew it was poison. So screw you, Isolde Delahunty, and screw all of you, wherever you are this evening, because I won. Oink just turned down a bronze Australian surfer demigod who now returns, still smiling, and points at the two cake stands of brownies.
By the way, Singapore Sal,
Some joker may have switched those signs over.
I stopped chewing. But that's really dangerous.